Good evening.
Good evening, Hanok.
How are you, Jasmine?
Good, and you?
Baruch Hashem. Are you the only one?
So far, I guess so.
Okay. We'll wait a few minutes. I know you have the questions to ask. So. I'm going to wait one more minute, and then you could ask your question whether somebody comes or not.
Okay.
Go ahead, Jasmine.
Well, first of all, I wanted to ask about the difference that you mentioned in your class of Monday between the way it's the Talmud and the Zohar is structured.
Okay, hold on a second. I believe some people arrived. Okay. The simplest way to understand the difference between the Talmud and the Zohar is the Talmud is explaining how to do something, how to do a ritual, how to lay tefillin, how to build the tefillin. What verses are to be written on the parchment? How to build a mezuzah? How to know if it's kosher? All of the how do you do these questions? This is what the Talmud explains. This is primarily what its purpose is. It's answering the physical question about it. The Zohar is asking or answering the why question. Why is there a mezuzah? What is its purpose? How do you create tzitzis? The Torah doesn't explain those things. It doesn't explain the how in many cases, and it doesn't explain the why. So that is the difference between the two. But on another level, what I was explaining on Monday, the way the both books, both sets of information are presented to us is not logical. You don't progress from one subject to another. You don't have a subject, mezuzahs, and you complete all of the discussion of the mezuzah in one location. In the Talmud, you have a pattern where the question of how do you make a mezuzah is asked, and it starts to explain it, and then it's interrupted with a story, with a midrash. It's interrupted with it takes you away from the subject. And then later on, it comes back to the subject in another location and finishes answering all of the questions about the mezuzahs. And the reason for that, as was explained to me, is this book was written, codified, through Ruach HaKodesh. And the Creator knows the psychology of mankind. He knows how our minds work. And He knows that we don't really follow subjects from A to Z. Our mind wanders. And so he allowed, or he told the redactors of the Talmud and the Zohar, do it in this way. Interject this story at this point so that we have a way of remembering the story, and it may not be applying to the subject of the mezuzahs, but it's applying to another subject. And it allows our minds to flow. It allows our minds to absorb more of the wisdom. That is the way both the Talmud and the Zohar are written. The difference between the two is the Zohar is answering why of these things, and the Talmud is answering how. But they both use the same technique of not covering the subject in a logical, straightforward manner. I was reading an essay on the halakha of what you cannot do on Shabbat, and the author, who is, I don't believe, is a Kabbalist. I've never seen anything in his writings about a Kabbalah. What he was questioning or saying or using as an argument to make his point was he was saying that these 39 do not do these creative acts on Shabbat. And it's essentially the statement is, do not do anything that was done in the desert, in the Mishkan. They didn't do them on Shabbat, so we're not to do them in the temple, and we're not to do them in our own Shabbat. But he was going through and explaining that there's a good, there's two or three chapters in the particular book of the Talmud that this subject is covered. And then it's covered in a whole other book. And why is it done that way? And the explanation, he doesn't know, but he's using that to explain why there is these 39. These particular 39. But he's not really understanding why it's done this way. Whereas my teachers explained the reason it's done this way, they didn't specifically say the items of the what we don't do on Shabbat, but they said it on other subjects, and I'm extrapolating it. What they said was the reason it's done this way is because our minds work this way. We don't absorb things logically, step by step. We jump around. We get different thoughts. Our thoughts interrupt ourselves. And so the Talmud is written in a way that keeps our attention because we don't stay on a subject from A to Z. We jump around. We change from stories to statements. Here is the halakha and a mezuzah. Here is the story about what people should do on Shabbat. I hope that's helpful for what you were asking, Basma.
Well, yeah, it is the way I feel like when we're reading the Zohar. It goes from one subject to another. It goes up and down. It goes, you know, it's something that we can just not keep up with this. I mean, it's not logical at all. I mean, at the end of everything, at the end, you can, like, you know, thread it back, you know, put the pieces together. But during the reading, it's no, you know, and then just your mind start to wonder because it is what it is. And now I understand that.
And that's exactly why the book is written that way, because while it was written by men, it was done through Ruach HaKodesh. They were being instructed what to say and how to say it and when to say it.
At the beginning, I thought it was English because it's my second language, but I wasn't understanding or I wasn't following up, you know. And I said, no, it's not. It's just like, you know, but now I understand more now that you explained that. And I see the Talmud, it's a little more consequential in time and, you know, a little more logical, but still goes up and down.
Yeah, it is more sequential than the Zohar, but it's still not logical. It's still not step by step. You have to jump around to get the full import.
Right. Yeah, exactly what you say. And it is right. The Zohar explains the halakha because you say, what do we do that for?
Correct.
And thanks God for the people that does it without, you know, wondering really what it is for. It's like Torah Lishma, that you do it for the sake of, you know, that God told you to do it.
Look, there are many people in the world that is an answer that is acceptable to them. They follow the mitzvot because that's a command from God. And that's what
right.
They think is appropriate. And it's not that they're wrong. It's that's the level of spirituality they're at.
Right.
But for me, when I started to study, I couldn't approach doing a mitzvah. I learned how it was done from practical experience. I didn't read the Talmud to know. I learned it from practical experience, from watching others. But I couldn't do it because God commanded it. That wasn't my nature. I needed to understand the why, and that's what drew me to the Zohar.
Yeah, it's wonderful when you open your eyes and you think, oh my God, it's the reason why.
Correct. That's the way I feel, but that doesn't mean that others are incorrect. You always have to remember that. That's the level that they're at, and they can be just as high spiritually as you and not have a need to know why.
And I believe me, I believe that's more honorable that they're doing it because of the love of doing the mitzvah. Than just, you know, have a reason why.
Yes. Do you have another question?
And my second question is about the Havaya Ani Serufim.
Go ahead.
I see the instructions that we're following, but indeed, what I know it's also, I can answer myself, that is to, as it says, to align with God. But can you expand a little bit more about this?
What it does is align your consciousness with the 10 levels of the Sephirot, which is aligning it. That means you're aligning with God. But I think your question related to why are we saying it three times as opposed to once, that you hadn't seen that before in any other ritual. We're not taught to say the Ana Bekol three times in a row. We can, but we're not taught to do so.
Well, I guess this is the union of the Keter Chochmah and Binah, the three times?
No. Let's approach it from another answer. Another way. The question becomes, why are there 12 tribes? Why not 13? Why not 14? Why not 11? So we know we have four letters in God's name, Yud Hey Vav Hey. And we know that the number three relates to the three columns, right, left, and central. Four times three is 12. So you need 12 tribes to connect to the right, left, and central in a complete way. Because the four represents Chesed, Gevurah, Tiferet, and Malchut. Or you can perceive it as Chachma, Bina, Zeranpin, and Malchut. But always there's these three columns. So when you are aligning your soul with the Sephirot, every Sephirot has 10 Sephirot within it, which means it has three columns within it. So in order to be complete, when you align your consciousness, your soul, with the Sephirah that you're talking about, you have to do it in the three columns. The same Sephirot on the right, the same Sephirot on the left, and the same Sephirot in the center. And that's why in this particular ritual, we say it three times. Does that mean we should say it three times for others? The answer is, it depends. There are many rituals where you need to say it. There are many rituals where you will say the letters of the words with different vowels. So you end up saying it five times, one for each of the different types of vowels. There are many rituals that I haven't taught, of course, but this particular ritual, in order to align yourself with Hashem, needs to be done within the frame of the three columns, and that requires us to say the intertwined word three times. And you'll notice that the vowels that we are using are the regular vowels associated with that particular Sephirah, which that information comes from the Zohar.
Oh, I see that. But I see that from he pared it down, the vowels, you do interchange.
Because there are different there are different sages who think that the vowels don't have the same relationship to the Sephirot that the Zohar teaches. So the person who put this together, and it could only have been put together through Ruach HaKodesh, he was told to use these vowels in that order for a particular purpose. Again, it's the same idea as why the Talmud and the Zohar jump around. It's part of the way that you balance your consciousness.
Now, I understood that the Hebrew doesn't really have vowels when you write it.
It does have vowels. When you write it in the Torah, there are no vowels written in the Torah.
Right.
But when you read it, it's being read with vowels.
Well, it is there, but it's not in a symbol like the letters.
Let me give you an example using your own name. If I spelled your name in English, J-Z-M-N, would you pronounce that Jozmin? It doesn't feel right, does it?
No.
It is inherently, not just because you're used to saying Jasmine, but because it feels right internally to put those vowels with that letter in that word. And that's true of the Torah as well. That's true of the Hebrew language. So every letter has a vowel, but it can be done with different vowels in different words, or the same word with different vowels, and it has different meaning. And that's why that's how we come to understand that there are 70 ways to understand every word and every verse in the Torah. Because of all the different combinations of vowels that work with those letters making up those words.
How many vowels
are there? There are some letters in a particular word you can't use all 9 or 10 vowels. You can only use 3 or 4. And there are other letters in other words where you can use all 10. But it's some of it has to do with the flow of the words out of someone's mouth, and they make adjustments. Some of it has to do with what is intuitively correct. But every letter, whether it's written with a vowel or not, has a vowel. You just may not be able to see that vowel. Even the letters at the end of the word, most of the time that we don't write the vowel, do we?
No.
But there's a vowel there, you wouldn't say the letter. It's usually the two dots, one on top of each other, which means it's no vowel. no vowel sound, so you say the sound of the letter. But every once in a while, there's a word that has a vowel at the end of the word. It's the same idea, which I haven't yet had an explanation for. When you have a het at the end of the word with the ah sound, you say the vowel first. You say ah instead of cha. I've not been given an explanation that makes sense. But eventually, as I've asked the question, it'll be revealed at some point.
Yeah. So, when you say this alignment prayer or realignment prayer, what is supposed in our everyday life in our bodies, what does it supposed to be doing, or what should be the results?
What should be the result is, on an unconscious level, you would be returning to balance. You may not know it, but you'll observe it in your behavior. It's not something you'll feel, but it'll happen.
Mm-hmm.
You felt the energy of what we did. It was very powerful energy, but most people are not able to put it into words what happened. You don't have to. Let the letters do their work, and their work is to bring you into balance. That's what the realignment phrase means. Why don't they say, well, balance your soul? Because most people don't understand that they're out of balance. They think everything is right with them. Even if, God forbid, they're raping somebody, to them, that's the right thing to do, God forbid. And I'm using that just as an extreme example. But we think we're in balance, and we're not. It happens all the time. But this realignment prayer balances you. It brings you back into balance.
So how many times should we say it? Every day? Once a week?
It's up to you. During Kislev, you should say it at least 3 or 4 times a week. Because it's by bringing you into balance, you're connecting to the idea of miracles.
In other months,
doing it once a week on Shabbat is acceptable. It's good. You know, you haven't done it in your whole life, and all of a sudden you've been given this thing. Try it for yourself. Feel it. Listen to your intuition. For some people, it'll be good to say it every day. And for others, once a week, for others once a month. Depends on the energy that you can handle. And that's not a reflection to say, oh, you can't handle the energy. No, this is where your spiritual level is and your spiritual need for realignment is. Letters don't want to be abused just like people. The letters have a consciousness. They don't want to be abused. They don't want to be used to say something that you don't need. So use your intuition. You'll know when it's right to say it.
Right. Interesting.
I believe there's somebody else on the line besides Jasmine. Do you have any other questions? And Jasmine, if you still have other questions, feel free to ask them.
No questions.
One at a time, please.
Yeah.
I take it there's no more questions.
No more questions.
So tomorrow, okay, tomorrow at 4:30, we will have a mini Zohar class. And hopefully we'll be able to finish section 16 of Parsha of Noah from the Zohar. And at 7 o'clock, we will have our regular Zohar class for the Parsha of Vayishlach. And I wish you all a really wonderful, good day and the balance of the week. And shalom to all.
Shalom.
Shalom. Thank you.
Shalom. Shalom all.